just ain't a weed in sight. I'm so scared cause I can't see the shore, and I'm wondering how I will ever score. Bucktails to the left of me, scopers to the right, here I am, stuck fishing structure with you.
Alright folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, Jaybird.
Steve, looks like I'm stuck fishing structure with you.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow. So, what are you...
Stuck fishing structure with Steve.
What are you doing, buddy?
I don't know. What am I doing? Oh, just doing a little pod, I guess. Yeah, we're just going to talk about musky fishing, huh?
I meant more in the general sense of what's going on up there. Other than that, what's going on?
Oh.
What's the weather looking like? Well, we know. We need to know about the ice. You were told me.
It's looking good, baby. Yeah. It was clearly everyone's probably aware there was a hard cold front for Saturday and Sunday, but it's rebounding big time. So the rest of the week's above normal. Everything I drove by, which is a lot of small to mid-sized lakes, was ice-free except for Big Arborvitae. Had a little chunk of floating ice in the middle. That'll probably be gone tomorrow. So
that's it.
Yeah, you get a little north of here, and some of the bigger lakes are still going to have ice or be ice covered for a little bit yet.
Right.
But pretty much ice out, ice free zone here tomorrow.
Nice.
So looking good. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, really good. Right on time. Perfect.
Well, you know, is it late? Is it early? Right on time. That's the call there. So fantastic.
Normal is good. Yupper.
I'll tell you, it's been wackadoodle weather. I actually was, when I called you just a couple days ago, I'm sitting here going, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fish. Freaking coming off the lake at upper 70s, Jay.
Right. We were talking about that. That's crazy.
The South is in a drought, folks. But hopefully that same cold front, we got smacked with some stuff that knocked the air temperatures down substantially. Didn't quite fire them up, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
When they're already not in a great mood, let's just do that, because you know it's the spring of as always, feast or famine. I've been kicking some teeth in for sure, and it's just like, then we could use some rain, you know, but that'll knock it down. And I think, you know, I guess the trajectory then for up there is just going to be baseline normality, you think? Like as far as just warm up and just...
Yeah, it's looking really good, right? Yeah, I mean, it's hard getting an accurate forecast past a week, but the next week is above normal pretty much every day, so that's really good.
I'm just looking at my watch. Holy crap.
It's almost May.
Well, I know. I was looking for what the date was, and I can't... Woohoo! It doesn't feel like it. A man could. Now, I'm not saying a man should, because I don't want to be involved, right, Jay? But a man could be musky fishing up there very shortly.
Yeah. Yeah. Less than 2 weeks.
Season will open. Shocking.
Yep. On most waters.
Yeah. It's crazy. Speaking of most waters, is there any more developments? And guys, if you don't know, there's been some changes in what waters you can fish in the Northwoods. I would say this. Not getting into anything, we stay away from the salacious, right?
But, well, it's just news. It's just heads up for people that might be coming up here.
Yeah,
you're
if
right.
you've been
yeah.
fishing, you know, the Lac de Flambeau res chain, Jay, you're right there in the thick of it there. You were.
Yeah, it's not far. I mean, within a half hour from my place, within
so if you
15
don't know,
minutes from the musky shop, Lac de Flambeau chain's closed to musky and walleye fishing. Yeah.
Right. So is that all? How does that kind of break down? You got like fences closed and then crawling.
Yeah, the chain itself,
is it crawling stone?
Right. It's both crawling stones, fence lake,
Okegamaw,
Flambeau, Long Interlocking. There's other lakes in the area, Sugar Bush. There's White Sand, Whitefish. Lots of lakes, and no forward facing sonar, and no walleye and musky fishing.
Oh, I didn't know about the no forward facing sonar.
Yep.
Now here's the thing, and I'm just just so you know, the more you know, this is a public service announcement, right? But nonetheless, I have had guys in the boat here the last couple days, last couple weeks, talking about it. Right? You hip me to it. Everybody kind of knows. If you don't know, now you know. However, the reason I bring it up is people have said, well, what can they do about it if we just fish? And Jay, you did the research. It is not great, correct? If a man were to go out there, you can actually be penalized.
Fishing out of season on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation, particularly during newly implemented restrictions, i.e. the spring 2026 bans on walleye muskie for non-members, carries severe penalties, including fines, seizure of fishing equipment, potentially a ban on fishing in tribal waters. Tribal conservation wardens enforce these rules, and violations are handled through the tribal court system rather than Wisconsin state courts. So, yeah, I mean, it's
and that's why we have. And here's an ad from attorney Gary Eaglefeather. He'll represent you in tribal court. I'm laughing because I can only imagine it ain't gonna go good for you. Can you imagine, Jay? Probably not gonna win if you gotta go in there.
Yeah, don't go out there and play dumb oh, I had no idea, or I'm pike fishing or something like that. It's just don't mess with it.
Well,
it's the same for everybody. These laws, the same thing. We've had different things.
Well, and I had to ask.
Irritated people, like the Minocqua chain right by the muskie shop nearby water, for years had no kill on walleye. That didn't sit well with people, but they were trying to get something.
It is what it is. Jay and I were gabbing this week, and I asked you, if I had any teeth, if there was anything you could do. And I've been, because that's the same thing. And multiple people go, well, it won't matter. Okay, seems like it could be more trouble than it's worth. You know what I'm saying? If you're going out there and quote unquote pike fishing, probably not the smartest thing to do. If you like your tires, so I won't even go there. Man, never ends up there, Jay. It's always never a dull moment.
No, it's Wisconsin, Steve.
Never a dull moment on that front. So,
and there's I don't know if you heard about, there's a lot of flooding south of here too. It's bad in a lot of areas.
A podcast pal that comes to the Muskie Shop Bash July, what day this year?
July 18th.
Be there or be shot. The Muskie Shop Bash. Anyway. So
that was a pretty good truck voice.
It was. Pay for the whole seat, but you only need the edge. Classic.
It's a good one.
But nonetheless, podcasty friend Randy sent me a video of sturgeon swimming in the streets.
Yeah, I saw that too. In a Walmart parking lot.
Oh my goodness. We missed a dude. Next week. What are the town names? David Bowie and Mick Jagger dancing in the streets, but it's sturgeon in the streets. So, anyway,
that's a good one.
That video will turn a man. I don't know what it'll turn him, but it's an odd video. But anyway,
it'll make you crazy.
It'll make you crazy. But you got sturgeon in the streets, walleye in the sheets. What do you know, Jay? What are they doing down there? Why is it flooding?
We had a lot of rain. Yeah, it's bad. I guess you could say it's somewhat isolated. Like a buddy of mine lives pretty much northwest of Sauk City. He got 20, 30 miles to the east, and it's they've got flooding, but not in his spot. So it's localized areas, Janesville, part of Milwaukee, Green Bay area, a lot of the Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin Rapids, whole Wisconsin River system's kind of over the banks and areas. So hopefully that dries out quick and doesn't cause too many more problems for folks, because there's some bad areas.
What if, or it'll just turn into Shrek and you can tell people to get out of your swamp? What do you think? I mean, there's an upside either way. So, God, once again, the comings and going of Wisconsin, Jay. It's always entertaining. It's been a heck of a week for Steve Areno here, so I'm going to knock through them, Jay. Just never ending. We got I've been working tirelessly on tires. There's nothing like running over a good nail in the parking lot. I didn't even tell you that. Yesterday was a bunk. Today it was a tire. So,
are you kidding me?
Yeah, dude.
Unreal.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know you were working on the bunk. I told some guys that were in today that were podcast listeners about that. You know, the never ending things of being a guide, you know, that stuff goes wrong all the time. Doesn't matter how new it is.
And everything's new. And it's just like, okay, now for something completely
totally different.
What fresh new hell will today bring?
You ran over a needle. Yep.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. But nonetheless, hey, I will say this. Preparedness is the key, right? I had a spare tire, but I'll tell you, if you got a boat, get those freaking tire plug kits. Have you ever taken a nail out and just plugged a tire, Jay?
No, yeah, I've tried that.
Pretty handy. They're like a couple bucks at the old Wally World.
Yeah, cool.
It's better than fooling with all that crap. You got to have that. If you're going, not to give you the breakdown, but I'm telling you right now, if you're traveling with the boat, you better have a lot of tools. And especially if you're a guide, you better have a full shop in the back of that thing, which is basically
Driving an 18-wheeler, basically, with your rig, you know. Do you have one of those battery-operated inflator things, you know, when you do have a flat?
I do. That's mandatory. I got the whole setup. Got the lithium portable tool set up. You got the inflator. I got the drill. I got the impact drill. If I have to take the tire off, not gonna do it.
I've seen that in action. Yeah, love this. Love that noise.
Done.
Yeah. Dogs hate it.
Done playing. Yeah. You know what? I would, if I had an 18-wheeler, I'd be over the top, Jay.
Right.
When I turn my hat around, going over the top. Anyway, sorry.
Turn your trucker hat around like Johnny B.
No, it's not Johnny. Stallone.
18-wheeler.
Over the top. Think about this, folks. Some of you are too young to have grown up in the late 80s and 90s. But entertainment back then was a movie about a young Sylvester Stallone who, if he could win an arm wrestling competition, he could make enough money to buy a truck to take care of his son. That is what they tried to feed us as entertainment. So anyway,
gotta have a dream. Come on, Steve.
You do. All right. Mike says, regarding Slopmaster spinnerbaits, is it best for lure performance, running true, to put added rubber core sinkers behind the weighted head on the hook shank or in front of the weighted head of the spinnerbait in front of closed loop portion? I have six of these spinner baits and like to add weight to all of them and have a shallow, mid, and deep. And deep options. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Steve. Love the podcast. So, modding spinner baits.
That's right up your alley, Steve.
By God, you're right up my alley.
Yep.
So, slop masters, throw them forever. Now, if you're throwing the big ones, you're going to need a bunch of weight. So, the way a slop master head is made, right? So, slop masters are a flat planed head to run high. If you look at the head the lead head on, looks like a lemon head one right there. The way they poured them, the lead head creates lift, right? So, you can actually, you're going to have to weight it a bit. When I mod those, I always tend to put it on the main hook. Not the trailer hook, but make sure you're running a trailer if you're putting the rubber core on there, right? So the trick, if you guys don't know, you get yourself a rubber core sinker, right? And you open it up and you put it on the shank of any hook. And this can be done. Something, Jay, I flipped through a book the other day. Freaking hadn't thought about it or seen in years. It was on a wading Sioux, right? Kind of on the fly. And I thought it was a neat trick, which was taking lead solder, right? Eating it in the boat, like a fruit by the foot. Just eat it. Just take a bite of lead solder every while. Okay, don't eat really lead solder. But what they were doing, where they were modding bobbies and Sioux by just wrapping lead solder around the shank of a hook as a quick mod where you weren't augmenting the bait all the time, right? Which was pretty dang cool. You could add a lot of weight or change the buoyancy. So, just of note, but on the shank of that hook, take your rubber core sinker, and then you open it up, you take the rubber insert out, and you compress it with, say, a pair of vice grips or whatever it is, or just whatever, channel locks, and mash it down on that hook, and you're going to be able to change the running depth. Now, for years and years and years, ran rubber cores. I have no problem with just a bell sinker, to be honest with you, either. Right? The rubber cores, heck, water grim when they polluted half Minnesota, so rubber cores are half harder to get now than ever. So, Jay, have you seen, do we have any rubber cores still? Is there a secondary supplier?
Yeah, bullet weights or something. Right. Yeah.
So, there was a minute there, they were kind of disappeared on us. But there's also nothing wrong with using a bell sinker, right? Now, you have the fast-attach bell sinkers, which are pretty dang handy, too. The little plastic clip-on ones, right?
You can put
those on. Those are great for putting it above the head of a spinnerbait. You'll get a little rocky, tumbly action out of it. You're not going to feel it in the bait, per se. But, you know, the cleanest is behind the lead head on the shank of the hook. If you put them on the wire ahead of the bait, right, you're going to pick up a little bit more debris, right? Not the worst thing you can do, but I don't think it's going to make too much. The thing I always think about, because, you know, we're already trying to, we got this wire coming through the thing, that rubber core, if a muskie's behind it, I'm not saying he's going to see it. I'm just saying it does enlarge the profile, right? Just if it's not hidden behind the skirt, so it's an additional possible visual, right? It's often pretty small, but if you put an ounce and a half on that, that's a pretty good chunk of lead, right? So looking at that stance, I'm going to go under the skirt. Now, I'm going to ensure that I have a oversized trailer hook. When I'm modding a spinnerbait in that nature, I've had fish that I've put one of these rubber cores on, I get a strike, I've got them on the trailer hook, and I just happen to make sure everything's good, and you see pretty good teeth marks in the lead itself. You know what I'm saying? So make sure you get a really good trailer hook on there if you're adding the lead. It doesn't change things too terribly much, but, you know, at the end of the day, you are reducing the overall gap between the shank of the hook and the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it's just a little bit of overhang, you got to realize that space between the hook point and whatever the thickest part is, you're augmenting that. And so at times that's why I've gone more so if it's early season and things of that nature are finicky, that's when I'll go a bell sinker more, because it's completely out of the way, right? And you go, well, a bell sinker would slide around, not with a little bit of tape built up or just something. There's plenty of ways you can kind of jam things in place and force them there. But, you know, that's going to be the ticket there. One thing to look at, like I said, is with the Slop Master head, it's intended for lift, so you're going to have to put more weight on there. You know, I mean, I was talking to Dr. Bob this week, and we kind of talked about some spinnerbait stuff. You know, he's getting ready for season opener, and it's like, if you're not fishing spinnerbaits, I know it's not cool, Jay. Spinnerbaits, how cool are they right now? About a zero
on a scale
out
of 1 to 10.
Oh, like a -3. Like
cool factor? I don't know. I'd have to check with the kids. Yeah, the kids. Yeah, at least a 4.
At least. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, we'll see. But, you know, for the younger cats, and that's one thing. You know, I have a range of ages, Jay. I got 75 today. I had 20 earlier in the week. You don't know. It's all over the map. That's one of the core foundational things I'd recommend having in the boat. And I know guys now, younger guys, don't even have any spinnerbaits. They're not throwing any spinnerbaits. It's like, come on, right? Have them. Just because the benefit, and again, the automatic modding. I mean, you know, not to harp on and preach on them endlessly, but I mean, if you said one bait, you can only have one. And you got to fish from open to close, that would be it.
I've caught so many, such a high percentage of my muskies on spinnerbaits personally.
I think as people come into the sport, they're weirded out by the single hook nature. And I've had to tell people, I've missed more muskies on baits that have 3 trebles than I ever have on a spinnerbait. right? It just the way they hit them, the hookup ratio is great. As long as you're setting the hook, you're going to be in good shape, right? And it's I know it's like you go from you got 2 points, you know, from 9 points on 3 treble hooks to 2 points, and people are weirded out by that. It ain't going to happen. So anyway, throw it in the repertoire. Anyway, Aaron, thank you guys for the podcast. It's great and hilarious. Keep it up. My wife and I have switched from bass fishing to muskie fishing. I've caught a couple fish fishing for bass that were in their mid-30s. I heard Joe and I've heard yourself say learning to muskie fish, you should have one bait and learn it. In my question, should I take one lure and learn it on one body of water while learning that body of water we fish? Goes on to say, so they're on a very lightly pressured body of water, right? Not a lot of pressure. And he's wanting to learn a bait because that's been the recommendation. And it almost ties into the spinner bait thing. So here's the deal. Any bait can work at any time. But I wouldn't recommend going out and going, hey, today's the day I learn glide baits. And that's all you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I prefer to do, and kind of the school of thought, you know, Jay and I myself have been, is learn the situational nature of seasonality and then climactic conditions, right? Learn what that 3-point bait check looks like. Are they mid shallow deep, right?
Yeah, therefore you're presenting to proximity.
Mm-hmm. Which is the problem. A guy could go, I'm going to learn to throw spinner baits. We're just talking about spinner baits. And you go, okay, you're just completely out of the zone. Because, and I say this, any bait can work at any time on any given day, period, with just the stars aligning. But, and it's actually a conversation I had this week as well, using quick feedback or numbers or any musky contact is the best way to learn a bait and become confident in it, right? Especially, we're coming into season for most people. Most people haven't picked up a musky rod in anger for months. And what are you going to do your first day out? You're going to throw things you're confident in. The most important thing you can do is from this guy's situation, is you need to learn seasonality. You need to learn how in the moment factors change musky behavior. Then you need to learn what all the bait classes do in general. Right? Coming from bass, there's no dive and rise, right? Coming from bass, the way that we fish glide baits is heck, we call, you know, there's baits that Livingston sells, like the Viper, they call it a swim bait. We call it a glide bait. And the way we implement things, right? Learning that and delving into that, instead of picking a bait and beating the paint off of it until it works, pick the bait for the right situation and then just stick with it. Right, what guys do all the time, they get their load of musky baits, they go out on the water and they're hucking and chucking, and it's, you know, it's akin to, all right, you're trying to do a project and you need a drill, you need a hammer, you need, you know, you need drywall tools, you need all this crap. If you try to nail, you know, you try to put a nail in the wall by hammering it with your drill, it's not going to go well. You need the hammer. So learn when the tools are applicable and then beat the brakes off of them when they're applicable. And then aside to not his question so much, I was talking about to a younger guy that's in the game now and he's fishing. He's had some success, but it's all very limited scope of baits, right, Jay? Super confident on rubber, super confident on a couple presentations. Everything else is haven't caught a fish on the bait class yet.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I was telling him the best thing you can do is, you know, because we're talking about the bash, we're talking about coming up there. And I said, I will go get on numbers. And I think that's what's awesome with Wisconsin, or if you have numbers water near you, which is taking it out and go, all right, well, I've caught a fish on diving rise. All right, I've caught a fish on a glide bait. I've caught a fish on a twit. Get that out of the way, right? And experience is going to teach you faster than anything else, right? You can sit here and listen and listen and listen until you do it and you go, you have that epiphanous moment where you go, oh, that's why you pause it, right? Oh, that's a slack line twitch. Oh, that's you know, they hit it on the rise. You got to get those under your belt. So taking the baseline, just the foundational baits out and doing it. Because I still know, Jay, I know guys that are going to Canada, and I know guys that are spending tens of thousands of dollars doing this, and they go, well, I've never caught a fish on this still. Like, what? How can you situationally know when to apply this if you've not done it, right? Much less from the thought process of, you can't imagine this. You come back to camp, Jay. You're on your big Canada trip. Your wife's boyfriend let you take the time off from work and go up there, right? Long story short, you know, you come back to the lodge, and everybody in the lodge is saying they're hitting dive and rise.
Mm-hmm.
And you've never caught a muskie on dive and rise. You have zero confidence in it. You have zero skill set in it. You're in trouble. You're going to have to learn on the fly, opposed to going out and doing it. It's something we've talked about a lot in the past. We haven't hit in a minute. What I think is important is, and it's funny, it's like when you and Tom go do the shorts or whatever, the intention's not catching a fish, you know, because Jay, you can attest.
Very true. Yeah,
many,
right.
How many times?
Yeah, how many people go fishing with the intent of not
catching,
trying to catch anything?
But to the point, though, and, you know, to your credit as well, baits show up and there's no instructional manual for the baits, and you got to go, what does this thing do? So you take it to the dock, you pitch it around. Does it look good doing this? And I say this because the short videos, because everybody loves the shorts that you do, and you know, they're helpful, but you go, Jay's got to figure out what this does before they just start shooting. You just don't start shooting and go, well, here we go. What does it do? Does it glide hard? Does it glide soft? Do you have to have an aggressive pull? You know, you're doing that all the time, which is something a lot of people don't do. And I'm not saying you have to go film video. I'm saying taking the time to go with the baits with zero intention of catching a muskie and learning the baits. I think it's something. I know a handful of guys that have done it and they go, holy crap. It changes your headspace because you're not focused on catching, you're focused on the bait. You're focused on,
you're focused on being highly observant as fast as possible.
Right.
When I go out there, that's what we have to do.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just like, let's get this done. And right. Okay, what does it do? What does it do? What does it do best?
And then get it on film. Yeah. But yeah, which is taking the bait and going, okay, it's a rehearsal. And that's not, I am going to rabbit hole. I don't care. They're not very often. There's not too many other things where you don't practice, right? Basketball, football, ping pong, volleyball, rugby ball, sports.
Nunchuck skills,
a lot of that, right?
Right.
But if you're going to have a video, or if you're going to have it in a TikTok account called Jay's Northwoods Nunchucks, you're going
to practice. Break dancing. I mean, you got to lay it down and you got to put in the grind
before you film the video. Actually, I prefer if you didn't. I will buy them. I will get on Amazon right now and I will buy you professional grade nunchucks if you will film yourself from day one until mastery.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay.
Right? I want to see nut shots, broken eyeballs. I will not pay the dental bill. What do you think? You just start swinging those things right out of the bat.
Yeah.
Wild.
I don't want to go there. Yeah. I've seen them in action when I was a teenager. It's very dangerous.
I watched Ninja Turtles a bunch. Not going to lie.
Oh, okay.
Not trying to brag or anything. But nonetheless, every other thing people quote unquote practice. The professional bass guys I know, they're catching fish all the time, but they go out and they spend time with the baits, and it's so huge. And I think that's, especially with it coming up, everybody's ice is coming off. You go down there, Jay. Go make everybody mad in your homeowners association and go throw a pounder down there at the duck pond, you know, or whatever. Because you go in the moment. And it's also, too, I mean, the crap, not to beat it to death, but you listen to me here. There's nothing like finding out in real time you don't know how to figure a bait when you got a 50 behind it.
Yeah, there you go. Now, that's a great example.
I've seen it so many freaking times. And everybody goes, oh, no, I know how to do it. Get you a 50 coming behind a River Run Manta and tell me how bad you screw that up, right?
Yeah, because not everything figure eights like a bucktail. Same. Okay, it's and even bucktails, yeah. I mean, there's obviously an art form to it. And you have to read the fish. And, yeah, we've always talked about we need to do another figure eight in master class or whatever, you know, down the road. But,
talking this way.
Jerk baits and stuff like that.
Yeah. All right, right. And they're all going to be different. And it's like, how
you... Yes.
Get out there, get out there and play with your baits. But, yeah, to that point, you know, you get goodness, you go to the jerk bait thing. Because a lot of times in the boat with clients, right, If it's like, I'll ask, hey, how you feel about glide baits, right? Feel great.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, all right, that's fine. I'm not picking, but
yeah,
I'll go, okay. Give them a couple seconds and I'll go, all right. When we get one coming up behind this, this is how we need to figure out this. And get that moment in. That's what I'm telling people to do is take that moment by yourself and just go through the tackle box. What does this do? I mean, I talk... Not to plug it, but I believe, no spoilers yet, I believe by this time next week you're going to be able to get your hands on the next book. We'll announce it next podcast, I think.
Okay,
I
know they're in route.
But I talk about this a bit, so I'm giving away some of the info here. But I went on a tip on this, if you can't tell, of sitting there and learning the tools, you know, where the difference in 5 minutes and going, okay, my Hot Tails Nugget glider does drastically different things than this hellhound on a short leash boat side. You know, not all gliders are the same. Jay's point, not all jerk baits. Each bobby bait can be different, right? I've got bobby baits and Suix where you go, well, I don't know about that one, but you know, they just have their own tendencies. And learning that is crucial. Anyway, Kyle, how are you getting the Banshee to walk side to side in the videos? Got a handful of them, had a little bit of time to fish them. I've yet to get the side to side walk. So here we go. Speaking of learning baits, with the Banshee to get the left to right walk that I'm doing, I'm on a Tranks, the 5/8-1, and I'm doing half handle turns, right? What I want is a little bit, just a touch of slack line in that. I want to see the line hop, right?
Yeah.
It's not a direct line. And that's part of slack line anything. But when I turn the handle, I want to see the line hop up. That's how you're going to get that consistent left to right, which that little son of a gun, Jay, you're going to be waiting until fall, folks, for a restock on that. If you haven't got your hands on it, there's just a couple left on that. Wow. And I thank you for that. But, you know, if you're looking to get your hands on them, like, I think we got single digits. We just, since the last podcast, wasn't it just the other ones came in, Jay, or something like that?
Got a few in late last week. Yeah. The last of them, I guess. Yeah. So, yeah.
But,
yeah. She's a dandy. They're going to go, well, they have been. Yeah.
But the trick with that is again, we're talking about rehearsing with baits or whatever. Get it going side to side in shallow, like just pitch it out. You don't need to crank it down or anything. You can get that left to right. Once you get the cadence in the reel or the feel, I'm not great because I've not spent the time with that bait in particular with the high speed reels to do that. I'm guessing you're going to be a little bit under a half turn because you don't want to pull it too much and it's just straighten it out. So slower speed reel. Originally, we actually talked about too, the slack line twitching it, which works just fine. You want the slack line in it to get the left and right like a traditional glider. So with the reel or with the rod to get the slack line. And I actually had another message. I'm just going to paraphrase this because I just saw another Banshee in the headline. So on that retrieve, what I'm doing with this quite often is not dissimilar from classic triple D, double D bait retrieves, right? So suspending jerk bait. The Banshee, in my mind, is a suspending jerkbait that has an emphasis on getting the glide right. So your other suspending jerkbaits have been glide-esque, right? That was a byproduct. The Banshee is intentionally glide. So it's like, throw it out, rip it down. So I'll throw it in the first part of that cast. I'll just pull it like a bulldog, make sure I'm advancing 3-4 feet of line, pull it down to depth. Then I'll start that half turn, get the glide thing, and then interrupt that with straight retrieve. So it's, you know, rip it down, glide, 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 and then turn the handle 3-4 times, surge, let it pause, go back to the glide. And that's one of the best retrieves I have right now, hands down. Also, too, you can just rip, stop it like a death pulse, right? Throw it out, rip it, stop, rip, stop, rip, stop. And you got that surge and then the hang, surge and the hang. But those are kind of my two favorite right now. I like to overcomplicate everything, Jay. So I'm definitely doing the pull it down, glide, 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 surge, pulse kind of deal. But anything that's intermittent, that's what that bait was meant to do is yes, you can throw it out and get the crank, but to get variety, right? So think of it this way. You're going to do a little bit of this next to shallow cover, and then you're going to do a little bit of this as we get away from it. You know, I'm trying to make baits as often as I can that are going to produce those bonus moves. I don't know how else to put it. Not a one-trick pony, but
yeah,
it's going to let you, with the more pressure we have in musky fishing, the more imperative, you know, first and foremost, everybody's going to say, you got to have a great figure eight. Cool. How about we get them to eat before they get to the boat? Right? I don't need to know what the bait does in a figure eight if you ate it on the cast. Use the Banshee to get those mid-cast triggers in. Even if you're on a straight retrieve, throw it out, turn, turn, turn. We're just cranking. You can get halfway in and just let that thing hang forever and get it eat. Or you can, you know, convince the fish, go, oh crap, it's on a straight retrieve, and you just dead stop and go in a glide and he's gonna come unglued.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's really to get mid-cast triggers going. Get that change up where it doesn't take a crazy amount of things, because a lot of times, if just to get a nice action out of a bait, we're really dedicating that retrieve and then much less messing the cadence up to get it going. So other than that, Jay, other than that, John, I saw the guy eating grass on the news and knew it would end up on the podcast.
Oh, that made my night right there. I forgot about that.
Saw the guy.
Watch that grass. Just went, Jay is recording this right now. He just rewound it.
Yeah, if you know it's well enough.
That is
beautiful.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it was too funny.
My other favorite, I was thinking, to be honest, I was making fun of the news up there. You had to get on the boat. And what was the other? Okay, Scare Clown. Classic.
Yeah, the Scare Clown. Right? Sure.
Real.
Like
if you
a
don't
year
know,
ago. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Go back. There's an episode, Scare Clown, where. Was it the reservation again, Jay?
If I remember, it was in Crandon, which is like southeast of the Minocqua area.
Quick refresher.
About an hour and a half.
Instead of a scarecrow on the water tower, they put up a scare clown. And they had we urge residents not to shoot at the scare clown. That's
they had to do
happens.
That.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because apparently they've had problems in the past with that.
And one of my personal favorites.
Get some, clown!
Exactly. Another personal favorite of mine was the guy that just walked up and shot somebody's horse in the head. Do you remember that? It was like, I'm not laughing at their plight, but dude just walks up and caps somebody's horse. Like, I hate that horse in particular.
Right.
Take
right.
that.
It's enough to just get,
take
the
that,
rage.
Butternut.
I mean, right, old Ed, come on. Oh,
per capita,
there's some crazy stuff around here.
Per capita, the most serial killers, folks. Per capita. Anyway, John continues. He does not talk about Scare Clown the summoning, however. My question is there a benefit to switching to BKK hooks? It seems like that hook is the hook to have currently. Should I switch the hooks that I have now? Is it better, or do I use them as a replacement? Great question. Very practical. Mm-hmm. So,
does he cite any lure examples he's replacing them on?
No. Things I can tell you. I'm a BKK man, Jay. Are you a BKK man?
You better believe it.
Are you a BTK man?
No.
So just checking.
Don't know what that is. Anyway, I was
trying,
but
to,
yeah.
trying to trip you. That was more of a BKK is more of a Muskie thing. BTK is more of a Minnesota thing. Anyway, so the BKK hooks are great. They are devastatingly sharp. If you don't know, they've got a really nice bend. They kind of check all the boxes on a premium hook, right? If you, Muskie shop's got them if you need them. When to change hooks. And let's just take this generally. So BKK or say you got a box of Mustads laying around. When do we change hooks? Some baits come with anemic hooks. Not going to name names. There's some baits that you're just like, bleh, right? Bleh. Primarily, average angler, you're most guys are going to go, oh, those hooks are small, and be freaked out with it. You can have, and I'll pick on myself, because folks have asked me if they should change them. On the Banshee we're just talking about, that has VMCs, but they're 2X strong small hooks, right? So it's like a 1-0 VMC, 2x strength. So yeah, one can hook it in a stump and screw it up, but it's... I'm not afraid to hook any 50-inch fish on that bait, right? I've seen other baits where you just go, bah, we'll pick on a bait that's a great lure. The crane baits, they have an anemic hook out of the package, right? That's just, everyone knows that. It is what it is. They'll hook and keep fish, but that's a one-time strong, pretty small hook, right? I've always advocated, hey, if you're on Trophy Class water, up the hooks on that, get something a little more serious on there. But there's other baits where the hooks are just plainly crap, right? A lot of the hooks that I'm saying that are crap are just straight non-branded Chinese black nickel, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of that. Yeah, there's exactly. They're non-branded. Exactly.
They are non-branded Chinese black nickel. You'll know what I mean because it's just a black. It's not all black, like a painted black hook, but it has a black tint to it. That's a very
Some of them. Oh, they look pretty cool. They're black, right. You know, but it's just like they're very soft.
They're somehow overly hard when you got Nip-X on them, but they'll break or they'll nearly impossible to sharpen.
Yeah, they'll dull easy too. Yeah,
right. And it's just like that is a hook that I'm going to replace. Right. So, say I'm throwing big rubber. I'm not picking on any brand, so we'll leave it at that. But there's some big rubber baits I'm immediately going to rehook, right, with some of the pull pause baits. If you see that hook on some different stuff, that's a hook that I'm going to personally replace from, and I'm getting to the standpoint of day one, ground zero, not fishing that hook, right? Now, replacements. When do we replace a hook? If a bait is running well and the hooks are not rusty and the hardware looks good and you like the performance, leave it alone. That's the way I've always been. I think, and I say this because I've heard a lot of people say, well, they like to do this on a bait, this, that, and the other. And it's because of the bait designer thing, right? Hooks change a lot in how a bait will perform. It really will. So picking on myself, so I'm not picking on anybody else. Titan. If the stock hook is changed on a full-size Titan, right? And I've had guys do it. I'm getting constant hook foul around the side. Well, when I was in the final stages and selecting the hook for the production Titan, I was looking at hook shanks. VMC sent me a pile of hooks. And I'm looking at the perfect hook size and hook shank length and split ring combo to prevent or minimize, I should say, hook fouling on the side of the bait, which is, it happens. It's pretty uncommon, but it can happen with any.
Everyone's had that on a dive-rise bait. It's frustrating because it kind of ruins your retrieve.
Right. And that can happen on a Suic. It can happen on a Bob. It can happen on anyone. But with the Titan, I was like, okay, I'm going to minimize this. Mm-hmm. And if you change the hook and you put two Mustad 6-0s on there with Super 7 size split rings, now you just got all kinds of mess. So there's a time and a place to change hooks. Now, with a bait that is performing the way you want it to perform, leave it alone, because you can often do more harm than good. And I've done that myself. I've bought baits, glide baits or something like, you know, whatever over the years. And I go, well, I don't like those hooks. For some reason, you get something against those hooks or you feel like it's underhooked, right? That's what I love. Right. And you can do more harm than good. So what I always recommend with any bait, especially a new bait, run it first with the stock hook so you can at least observe the action before you go tinkering with it. So this was the intended design. This is what I bought. And I'm not saying, you know, once you buy a bait, you can listen, you want to freaking put freaking 10-aught trebles on a Titan, more power to you. Buy two.
Yeah. You're adding weight, though. Yeah, that's something you have to watch out. Yeah. Right. But once you add a bunch of weight, yeah, you're going to change that aspect, too.
You bought it, you own it, do whatever you want with it. But observe the bait in the water to say, okay, that's the wheelhouse of where I'm at. And then you're tweaking because hooks can quickly change the buoyancy of a bait. Picking on myself so I leave everybody out of it. This is all baits, period. Titan Junior, right? That's a pretty delicate balance on buoyancy, right? And if you want it really fast, you can take a hook off and all this stuff. So with those baits, that's not a bait I'm going to go and immediately change the hook on because it's like really delicately balanced where I'm going to be paying attention to that. Now, you know, benefits of straight up, and the other consideration is like straight up, we need a better hooking percentage. That can happen with some baits because of just the size and the nature of the bait. That's, like I said, that's what I'm thinking about any kind of hook changes, whether it's BKK or whatever, right? That's just what I'm going to consider. Also, too, just to pound it, Jay. So seasons come back. Some people have just left their boats. They're out there letting the red squirrels chew on the wires as we speak, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they winterized it and parked the old rig under a pine tree. And they're going to crack the seal on the winterizing wrap there here, probably already doing it. And here's a bunch of baits and the hooks are, they got rusty and they got dusty and crusty on the boat, right? That you got to change those. And it drives me nuts. I hate changing hooks. We talked about this a few weeks ago. But I will tell you, and just on the front, man, that welded on shank, that welded on barb on a treble hook, you don't want that to get rusty and degrade. They can pop right off, right? So change that. But, I mean, as far as straight up, like the benefit, you got to buy the BKK hooks because most of the time you're pretty good. Right. If your stock hooks are generally 90%, 95% cool. If you run into those, like I said, those nondescript black nickel, hard to sharpen, you'll know when you put a file to them, you go, I can't get a point on this thing. Those are the ones that I'm going to just jump on and go, yep, you're out of here.
You're gone.
You're gone.
Garbage can.
Yep. I'll feed you to the scare clown. Tonight at 10, Scared Clown the Summoning, followed by...
Yeah, we tried to shoot that video once. Neighbor Steve, he wanted nothing to do with it. He was scared.
I know. There's another video.
That would have been epic.
Me and Jay were trading back a Bob Mezencomer video this week that I think we need to reshoot scene for scene, like a homage, like a remake.
You were blown away by that one. Yeah, I know.
Dr. Bob in on it. Another one for the board, Dr. Bob. What? Thunder on the Water, a tribute. Whatever. Shot for shot, fish for fish.
Okay.
he's walking it now. He's walking it. Bam! Another one. More points for the board there, Dr. Bob.
Yeah. We got to get Dr. Bob on the phone. We got to get him on the phone and on the podcast.
Right there. We haven't
it's been too long.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll get him on next week to talk about something. Daniel, I feel like my boat control is poor. When it's windy, say about 5 to 10 miles an hour, I really struggle. What are some tips to get better with boat control? Wow. So, real basics here. 5 to 10, not too bad. A 10 can gust your rim. Some basics here. First things first, ground zero. Look at how your outboard is positioned. What? Huh? you can do a lot of damage to your boat control by you pull into the spot and your boat motor's all cocked off to one side or that side or whatever, right? What I always try to do is when I stop, I pull into an area, I straighten my wheel out, right? So I have straight line control and I'm clean. Now, what I will do if I'm fighting the wind is I can use the rudder of my outboard, right, to help with my boat control as well, right? So how you leave your outboard in the water can hurt or help. So if you're struggling, let's make sure we're not doing things that hurt, right? If you got to play the wind, you can actually offset a bit, right? So first things first, make sure we're set up for success. So make sure your outboard is straight up and down and it is centered, right? If you got a sloppy engine, get it fixed. Have it straight, so you should have theoretically straight control. It's not pulling you left, not pulling you right, or it's not kind of slowing you if it's blowing, right? Boat control, period, is anticipating the effects of what's coming. All right? What I see time and time again with folks that struggle with boat control is they're just trying to do what they want to do without considering what's going to happen. Does that make sense? Well, I want to fish this weed edge. They're not compensating or planning ahead. They're just trying to react. Right? You're not going to fight the wind. If it's really blowing, say it's 10, 15, even 20, which is awful. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I had a northwest today, Jay. That's a musky wind, let me tell you. But blowing pretty good a clip there, and it's like one of those days your face hurts when you go off the water, like, ugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm coming into areas, first and foremost, I'm observing, okay, what is
this? Yeah, you get a plan before
right,
you start.
That's what I'm saying. What is this gonna mm-hmm. do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it takes 5 seconds, and there's so many people that miss this simple step. Just go, huh, what's gonna happen to this? Anticipate. Maybe you start further off the edge you're targeting, right? Maybe you look at the spot and go, "I'll be a heck of a lot better if I went the other approach this another direction." So you can't quote unquote. And I'm not, you know, let's leave the structure fishing out of it. I hate the word spot, but you know, you're gonna hit your spot, you're gonna fish this spot, and you're gonna control your boat in the same way. But yet, we're not compensating for all the different things that are happening. To the extent of, if it's really blowing, sometimes you are best to set up sideways and let it just take you straight in, right? And then let's say we're fishing a straight weed edge and you got a 30 mile an hour blow, Jay, right? And so are you going to do well trying to parallel that weed edge? Or are you better off to let the wind take you into it, fan cast it, get on the outboard, come out, reposition, and keep drifting into it. Let the wind take you where you need to be, right? And try to fight it sideways. There's cases where it's more efficient and you have better control, because good boat control is so foundational to good retrieves. And not to harp on the book, but yet again, something I go into is boat control on this. And I mean, when you sit down and you're putting pen to paper here, or, you know, scratching it on the prison walls, it distills down to good boat control is simply control that does not detract from how your lures are running, right? The muskie does not care how the boat is controlled, but it will respond negatively or positively to how the boat is controlled and how it impacts your presentation. If you need to be going low and slow, but you're dragging baits because you can't keep your foot off the trolling motor, negative impact, right? If you can't hit your target, you know that muskies are on this depth. You've done all your stuff. You've done everything. You've done the hard part. You've patterned. You know what they're eating, but you got to hit casts that are hitting the 8-foot break, right? And you know, between 8 and 12 in the first 30 feet of this, there's going to be fish there. If you can't position your boat in a manner that's delivering there, we got big problems, because it's a negative impact on your casting accuracy. So is the bait Are you hurting your presentations? Are you helping your presentation? Because your boat should not do either. Your boat should be neutral, right? Your boat should not influence negatively or positively per se. The control should be a net positive, right? Okay, I have good boat control. It's allowing my baits to do what they do as perfectly as possible. But bad boat control is an absolute negative impact across the whole spectrum there, you know? Anyway, Jay, one more. What do you think? You got it in you?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Hunter, do you fish humps differently? One might say, how do you hump? Wow.
What?
Whoa. Hey, survey says, jokes for days. Jay, we asked 100 Americans, how do you fish humps differently? What do you think the top answer is? Buzz in now. Are you asked, do you fish humps differently than a reef? So, the knee-jerk reaction is to say yes, because they're two different things, but realistically, it's not like the most dramatic shift. Right now, a reef, what's interesting about a reef versus a hump, conceptually, we have something coming out of the basin, whether it be mid-depth or main basin. We have something that is irregular, that's a rise in the bathymetry, the topography of the lake bottom, right? The reef, in general, the way you break it down, most people are thinking the reef exists and it has the top and it's got all this stuff, is there's generally a separation of how I'm going to fish the top of a reef, and I'm going to break down a reef, and I'm going to work out to the contact point and the main areas around a reef, where a hump is completely submerged and I'm not worried about necessarily separately targeting the top opposed to targeting the area around it, unless it's exceptionally big, right? So at least the way I conceptualize a hump is in general a little bit more of a smaller feature, right? I'm sure somebody's thinking they got, you know, the giant hump in Lake Wacky Wacky, right? But in general, humps are just rises off the bottom that do have a top, a crest, and then the sides. But breaking down a hump is to me, is like I can usually get that done with one presentation, where a reef in my mind is a multi-stage endeavor.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Sure.
Right? So I may be able to hit a hump and go, all right, let's put on a crack and get it down there. Bang, bang, bang off the top of the hump. Bang, bang, bang down the sides. Right? We did something. Or we troll over it, and then we troll around it. Where a reef might have shallow section, a midsection, and then like a deep bouldery or a deep area, and then it's extruded
out. Yeah,
the
back section. Yeah. Multidimensional for sure.
And the main difference between reefs and humps in the approach, right? Just the main thing that I see, just thinking out loud here, is again, there's plenty of reefs that are not exposed to the surface, but a lot of like your classic musky reefs that people are thinking about, they get, you know, they're at least, the ones I'm in my brain are the ones, you know, they're at least breaking the waves of the top. You're going to have a slack side to a reef quite often, right? Because the reef is coming up high enough in the water current, even if it is subsurface. Let's say there's one reef I can think of on Eagle I'm really successful on, just perennially, which...
Danny's Reef?
No.
Oh, different one. Okay.
Danny's Reef, no. I don't think there's a Danny's Reef out there yet. He's got to hit one real good, and it might get renamed Danny's Reef. But there's one that is not... it doesn't break the surface, but it's high enough in the water column to still have a slack nature to it, right? You can't see it, but you can feel it in the baits, right? You fish one side of this thing and like, okay, it's kind of moving around. You can just drop a bait on the other side and it's slack. So you can have that depending on if it comes up enough. Where a hump in general, it's not something I'm thinking where that, with the caveat being, okay, if there's a hump in a river, there will be a downstream thing. Let's keep it lake-ish right now. But where I'm not thinking about current influences when fishing a hump or slack water or wind push as much as I am in a reef scenario, right? Both of those, I mean, the approach on both a hump versus a reef, I'm going to check the windblown side first. Usually back to a boat control thing. I'm going to check the windblown side first because
that sounds appropriate.
Yeah. Generally, if you get into that thing, and then there's one staged up on that, that's usually a pretty quick yakety schmackety, we're done, folks. Right? So let's say you've got windblown current or it's in a reservoir and there's a hump. You know, getting on the upside of it, letting the current take you and or the wind take you into both of those structures first can tell you a lot. And if you go into those, like, say, a reef in Canada, totally classic. You know, you set up, and everything, it's shocking, Jay, that everything ties together because it's all musky fishing. So back to boat control. You make your decision of how we're going to approach this thing, right? Well, is the course... or the course of least resistance, just letting the wind blow you into it. Yeah. So set your drift up, and then fan cast into it. If you pop a fish, you got a big hot follow on that windblown side. Now it's a far less time commitment. You know what I'm saying? Opposed to they're not really moving, and now we need to really, like, pick this thing apart. We're confident because the bait fish are there. We're confident because of the climactic condition. We're going, blah, 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 blah. We know there should be somebody here. But coming in on what the obvious, where the hot fish should be, where an actively feeding fish should be, setting up your drift into a hump and or a reef, anticipating that first pass, just get that done, right? But I mean, what would you say, Jay? You've fished a lot of humps.
Well, I'm envisioning the average hump being something small, you know, maybe 15 yards, 10 yards wide. Some of them come up fairly close to the top, some don't. But
being called an average hump.
Yeah, an average hump, right? Think of it more of a circular type approach versus you know, something, you know, parallel.
Yeah. What do you know? Anyway. Jay, what's your musky season predictions? Like Jimmy the Greek, what do you got?
I think it's going to be great.
It's going to be wonderful.
Around here, everything's just perfect. You know, I mean, average ice out day, can't have a better start than that.
Everybody's already having a great time.
Yep, everyone's getting fired up. Getting a lot of people coming in, getting ready. Up.
Anyway, mm-hmm. Jay Bird, say good night.
All right, guys. One night. Thank you. One that will get bit. One that won't get stuck in heels, gonna make my wife throw up. One that needs blood, one that will make it good, so I can cast all day long. One that makes much misunderstood. I'm gonna catch up.